Well, it's a pleasure today to be speaking with Mr. Joseph Sick. Joe is a distinguished former faculty member of the Williamsport Technical Institute and the Williamsport Area Community College. He was the person who had the vision to create the Earth Science Campus and many of the programs associated there, and was the first director of that campus. Joe came to Williamsport and the Williamsport School District and Technical Institute in 1948 and retired after 34 and a half years in 1983. So Joe, I'm really looking forward to learning about your experience and so forth. Let's start with sort of your background. You had a long and distinguished career, particularly in agricultural education, and as an administrator relating to natural resources. Would you tell me about where you were raised and your experiences growing up on a farm and how that influenced you?
Well, I'll try to. I was born and raised in Lovelton, Pennsylvania, of course, and in Wyoming County. And I was on a, I guess you'd call it, general farm. But I think one of the things that influenced my interest, my dad was a blacksmith. He operated a sawmill. He owned 420 acres of woodland and a few acres of farmland. So he would, he and whoever he had working for him would hire people to cut logs in the wintertime, and they'd skid them down on the frozen ground and store them up. The spring of the year they would saw, and then haul, some of the lumber would be dried, and they hauled it by wagons pulled by a team of horses, had two teams of horses, and they would haul it, leave at 4 o'clock in the morning and get back at 8 o'clock at night sometimes, and they sold it to Wyalusing, Laceyville, places that would buy their timber. And he was always working, and I was one of five children, three brothers and a sister, and we all worked, and he was reasonably prosperous because he had income from more than one source, and people that wanted to borrow money would come to him for $100, and they would do it on a handshake. And there weren't many people in those days that had where you could go, and other than the bank, and get someone to trust you. And I don't think he lost very much. And I think that ambition that he had, I sort of inherited, and my mother, of course, was very supportive, and I think I still have the disease.
Well, I see some relationship there in the sense of, obviously, as in blacksmith, working with metal and equipment. And I know that we'll come to it later. We'll talk about the creation of the forestry program. So obviously, there's and the creation of the sawmill over at Earth Science. So obviously, you had some background there. Did he teach you blacksmithing, or was it essentially you're observing him doing that?
Well, that's interesting you'd ask that, because when I was up at Penn State in the NYA program, National Youth Administration, for a short course, five months, one of the things that we were done was go down to the engineering department and take a course in blacksmithing. So when I came home at the end of the 4 or 5 months, I brought some chisels and some things, and my dad said, "Well, I could have taught you that." So I never paid much attention to what he was doing. I had to turn the blower on the forge, you know. I didn't like to do that, but he would get me to do that. And so I think the interest and success that he had kind of brushed off on me.
So that sense that there was more possibility that you saw. Did he encourage you to focus on agriculture and agriculture education?
He encouraged me to get a job and farm with him and stay home and not leave. And my mother was the reason that I, when the opportunity came to go to a short course at Penn State after I graduated from high school on this work-study program. He wasn't anxious for me to go, but I went.
Did you study agriculture or vocational aspects when you were in high school, or did you take academic
I took
classes?
2 years of academic and 2 years of business.
Okay. So the turning point then was this National Youth Administration Program at Penn State, and
That's probably true. The faculty, the professors we had were retired. We lived on the west end of the campus at an in new it was a, it's during the Roosevelt administration, and he was of course interested in that type of thing. We lived in new barracks. Was about 65 boys there. We had a nice dining hall, and we had supervision, and we went to school for 2 weeks on campus with these professors, and they taught us such things as elementary chemistry, rural sociology, opportunities that were possible in agriculture, and botany, and beekeeping, and something about animals. And then 2 weeks we worked on the school farms, did whatever the supervisor would ask us to do.
That was in 1944, is that correct?
No, that was, I graduated in 1940, and that was in 1941.
On 41. So it's before the Second World War started.
But, well, yeah, but we're.
It's right in that general time period. Who told you about the program? Did you learn it through high school or someone else?
About this,
About this
I
program,
went. I
National Youth.
was a Grange member from the time 14 years, and still am. And the lady that worked in the public assistance office was master of the Grange. We called him master. And she asked me if I'd be interested in going to Penn State for a short course, and I said I would. And she said, "When could you leave?" And I said, "As soon as you can make arrangements." And went by bus, and then I never came home until August, and that was probably the last of February.
So that was an exciting time for you.
Well, exciting, and I'd still see some people that are still alive that was there
Okay.
occasionally. Very
And
nice time.
when you came home in August, then what did you do after that?
I came home in August because having been there for those months and exposed to what we were exposed to, six or eight of us decided we wanted to go to college. So we took the entrance exam and were accepted, and I don't know whether we were enrolled. I think we were partially enrolled. And so I came home for a couple of weeks in August and then started as a freshman at the fall semester. That was disappointing to my dad also.
So, were you financing yourself, or was your family helping to finance?
Pardon?
Were you paying for your own tuition, or were your
Well,
family
that's
helping?
hard to it's hard to believe. Tuition the first semester was $67, the books were 12. I had saved with this ambition that I talked to you about $500 that I hadn't spent and was in the bank. And by raising chickens and a calf, and calf then becomes a cow, and you sold a cow, and all those types of things. And that, and then I worked for my room, made beds in this kind of a place downtown in a rooming house, and then worked in a restaurant for part of the meals. So I went 5 semesters on $500.
And then
I think my dad gave me $30 the fifth semester.
okay, so that would be 2.5 years approximately, right? And then the war intervened.
And I was in ROTC and advanced ROTC 5 semesters.
Right.
The fifth semester you could be get in advanced ROTC, and when we were in the reserves, you joined, so you could stay there. And but then all of us, when it came time to leave, were sent for basic training. It was kind of a disappointment, but that's the way it went.
And you were stationed in Hawaii, as I recall.
Well, at about 8 or 9 months
Right.
of training here and there in the United States, Alabama and Georgia and Fort Meade, Maryland. And then I went to Hawaii for, I think, about 22 months and trained with the idea of invading Japan. But I was in infantry at one time, and then I was in ordnance, which is supply. And of course, Truman fixed that. We didn't have to go to Japan.
So when were you released then from the service?
Pardon?
When approximately were you released from your military obligation?
Oh, 1944. Because I had 2 years of school and graduate. Well, it wouldn't have been
45,
40,
maybe.
45.
Okay.
After, you know, it takes about 5 minutes to get released after the, after we conquered Japan.
Okay. And did you immediately resume your study at Penn State?
Yeah. Graduated in 1948.
And then you ended up in Williamsport, is that right?
Well, I looked at several schools that was available, you know, to teach vocational agriculture. And this seemed to be the place that wasn't, it was about 70 miles from where I was raised, and it a lot of the little ag departments were isolated, and it didn't seem to be much that you could do there. And here I saw possibilities. And even though the facilities weren't adequate, but they were, the morale seemed to be pretty good and interest, and I thought it was a place where I could learn as well as teach what I knew.
You said the facilities weren't all that maybe one would hope for. Would you describe the facilities when you arrived?
Well, they weren't very good. I was in the basement of buildings, you know, for a classroom and for our shop, and within the last 10 years before I came, there had been a flood in this area, and on the top of the cabinets were some sand and stuff that was there, and it was filled. But you know, if I remember one time we had an evaluation from someone from Harrisburg, and they said, "Oh, we're enthused about what you're doing, and morale seems to be good, and the students are learning, but your facilities are so bad." And I felt kind of insulted because I didn't realize they were that bad.
Now, the facilities in the basement you're talking about would have been what are now the shops or the technical.
It was underneath pattern making, and the classroom was underneath machine shop.
And you had some noise above you? Was there any noise from the machine
the
shop?
Noise, that wasn't a problem.
That wasn't a problem, okay. When did you get connected to the Brock Farm?
Well, we had Mr. James Bressler. Jim Bressler was the administrator at that time of our department, of two of us. And then there was one adult that worked on the two farm men that worked on the farm. So I, in general, went to the farm one day a week with the kids, students, and did whatever was to be done down there. But majority of what teaching I did was at the main campus.
Yeah, so classroom and in the shops.
Yeah.
And you were teaching high school students.
Yes.
But that was part of the Williamsport Technical Institute.
Yes. But you know, at that time, they were lent to the WTI, but they were high school students. I was hired by the Williamsport School District on lease to WTI.
Okay.
The final person that made the decision was the superintendent of schools with Dr. Park's recommendation.
Right. When did that relationship eventually change with WTI?
I'm not sure.
Okay. You talked about that you sensed a feeling of enthusiasm regarding the program. Where did that come from, this enthusiasm for agricultural education, when you came as a new faculty member?
Well, it was my job, and I felt that you need enthusiasm. And I was interested. I had sort of a good background in it, and I always enjoyed the students and enjoyed their parents and enjoyed what I was doing. And
Is there any specific memory from that time with students or an incident that may have
well,
happened?
you take pleasure in the progress that the students make if they have their projects and they're successful, and you we'd have a FFA banquet, like up at Pine Run Grange, and the parents would put it on pretty much, and we'd give out awards to students for having projects very similar to 4-H, you know, and I always enjoyed the students and seemed to have good rapport with them.
The FFA is the Future Farmers of America. And that was something you felt was important as part of, in addition to their classroom and shop experience?
We taught leadership. At one time, when we'd have a convention at Penn State in the summer, and one of the contests was parliamentary procedure contest. And one year we were top parliamentary procedure team in the state. And things like that, accomplishments that the students were able to master,
Did all these students already have farm experience, or some of them were interested in it?
Majority did, but even at that time, if you lived in town, you could have, I had boys in Newberry that could raise 50 or 100 chickens in their backyard. Then we would make capons, teach them how to make capons out of them, and the parents were interested, and they sold some and ate some, and then we students could have projects on the school farm, like strawberries or sweet corn. I would help them with that, and I had a little pickup, and we'd help teach them to when it was time to cultivate and pick corn, and they did the work, and someone else told them when.
Did you do anything regarding agricultural education during your summers?
Some I worked on my master's.
Okay.
And then at that time, professors from Penn State would come down here and teach. It normally wasn't agriculture, it was methods of teaching and evaluations, and I've forgotten the names of them, but they, so it took 30 credits in addition, as I'm sure you're aware, and I think in 5 years I had that.
So you did your master's with Penn State?
Yeah.
In agricultural education?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it wasn't. It was much less agriculture than a BS degree.
Right. More in theory and as you said, in teaching and so forth.
Yeah.
What are your experiences or memories of the Brock Farm?
Well, you know, we had a poultry farm, one of several hundred laying hens, white leghorns, and we had pigs, swine, and beef. Had a manager at the, Gordon Hiller, who was still around the area, and very interested in conservation. He was the dairy manager. Fred Coburn, who isn't with us, is gone. Took care of the poultry and the pigs, and I always had some questions about it in my back of my mind. It was hard to make it successful. You know, agriculture in general has always been a struggle for people that were raised on a farm. You have to work hard, and you, in general, you pay what people ask when you buy, and when you go sell, you sell for what you can get. And it was, and then we also had a veterans program that I wasn't involved with, but was on the Brock Farm, and so I had some questions about it, and I wasn't too surprised. I'm sure I don't think we wanted to win the arrangements that, Mrs. Brock had given the school district 40 acres approximately. And then she one of her adopted sons met Frank White at Penn State, and they become friends, and she was convinced that it wasn't the thing to do. And then the school district paid her, she paid them so much for what they had invested in improvements, and the relationship was severed with no problem. So we were without that as a laboratory.
So that losing the Brock Farm property as a laboratory was obviously a significant change for agriculture education.
Yeah.
Not so much for me,
because I was in VOAG, the projects that the kids had was at home.
Okay.
We had less town students probably take it.
Was any land used here in what is now the current campus of the college for ag?
Say that again.
Was any land used for projects here in the vicinity of what was the school district and the WTI?
The only land that was used here, and the land is still there behind Grit. I couldn't go to the farm anymore. It was an acre or so of land in there that we used for grow shrubbery. And I think there's some overgrown pieces of evergreens back there yet, but we could go there. We had a rototiller and raised shrubbery.
So in addition to what most people would traditionally think of farming, and that is livestock and produce, you did some things that might be a forerunner of landscaping?
Oh, yes.
And did you do things with the high school students who would be a forerunner of forestry also? Did you do any timbering?
Very little.
Okay. The property that Dr. Parks had, which is now the Morgan Valley property, did you use that at all with your high school students?
No. The only recollection I have of that, Dr. Parks took me over there one time, before he actually had given it, and wanted me to know, because he knew that I was, hardly anyone at WTI were agriculturalists. Jim Bresser and I were like kind of black sheep or sheep of a different color, and he took me over there, and I don't think that he actually walked the premises, but he told me where they were and asked me if I would do it, because after he was gone, he wanted someone to know where the land, who owned it, where the boundaries were, and he asked me, and of course I couldn't do very much about it, but he had feelings for it that no one else had, if I would do what I could to keep it in good shape.
So his vision was to see it used for educational purposes even then?
I'm not sure what he had in mind, but he didn't want it abused.
Right.
And there wasn't much I could do, but I did walk the premises, but no one ever asked me where they were.
Okay. Let's talk about Dr. Parks for a while. What are some of your other recollections of George
Pardon?
Park? Let's talk about Dr. Parks for a few minutes, since he was the first head of the Waynesport Technical Institute, and then eventually became superintendent of the Waynesport School District. What are some of your other recollections of George Parks?
You know, my recollections of him are all favorable. He was very friendly to me. I don't know, maybe because of the agricultural background. He wasn't pretentious. He was what he was. And even after he retired, he would ask my wife and I to come up to his place. One time he asked me if I'd stop, and you can't imagine what he wanted to give me. They were master carbons that he had collected, used, not used, but hadn't been used. You know what master carbons are?
Sure.
You typed on them and then you run them off
right.
Tests, and he wanted to make sure they got used, so he told me that he had saved them and gave them to me so they wouldn't go to waste. He was very frugal.
That seemed to be his whole approach, was to make the most of everything that you had.
Yeah, and I don't suppose that we'd be here talking today about what we're talking about if it hadn't been for him.
One of the things he was very supportive of or encouraged was acquiring surplus government equipment. Were you involved in any of that?
Not really.
In talking about George Barks, you mentioned that he had an agricultural background, is that correct?
I'm not sure that he did. I think he was in Altoona, but he was had his attitudes were similar to rural people. He was common, you know, and appreciated someone that, like, he would ask me if, can you do something to the front of this building to make it look better? I've got $100, buy a few shrubs and do, and I'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that had something to do with his feeling. And I always, I guess I appreciated what his goals were.
Mm-hmm. One of the things he stressed very much was that education should lead to a person being employed. Was that something he also stressed with the high school students? Did he assume, or did you assume, that they were going
well,
to employment?
You know, I don't think that he stressed so much with the high school students that they would, we assumed a lot of them would stay on the farm, or
mm-hmm.
but he did stress that if you didn't have students and you were a teacher, you didn't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So he would help. If things got a little shy, he would do what he could to, if he might have suggestions. One time, I think students weren't as plentiful as we should have been, and we had what we called that time students that had problems learning. We called them slow learners.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught agriculture and shop to them, it must have been 5 years. And then they would had 2 weeks of English and math and the type of thing that they could handle, which that was a good program.
So it was the sequencing that they would take academic subjects exclusively and then take agricultural subjects exclusively, which became sort of the model for the area of vocational technical school, correct? Under WAC.
You know, like machine shop, if you have a set machine set up and you're there for an hour, you really can't learn because it's time you get going, it's time to quit.
Mm-hmm.
If you have students for a certain length of time, it's a much better learning situation, especially if it's working with your hands. And
since you had gone on from a farm background to college, did you encourage some of your students to do that as well?
To farm?
To go to Penn State, for example, and do agriculture.
We had
education.
Some that did.
Was that something that you
well,
stressed?
We talk about it, and those that were interested would go up for FFA week, 6 or 8, and I'd take them and stay there with them on 3 or 4 days, and you would take them around and show them kind of like a and maybe some of them. Charlie Ault, for instance, was one student that even belonged to the same fraternity I did, and there was others that went there, and you do kind of try to give them some thoughts about
mm-hmm.
further education, and in particular Penn State.
Any of them go on to become teachers of agriculture?
Not that I remember.
Well, agriculture by the 1950s, and probably actually earlier than that, was beginning to decline its importance in the economy. It was still important in Pennsylvania in particular, but did economic change or shifts in society affect what you were doing and the number of students you
had?
Well,
you know, for several years I taught adult veterans on the job training, and we had from anywhere from 10 to 18 students that would, and I did that full time. And Mr. Bressler would take care of the ag students. And I would spend, I think it was 4 hours a week with theory, we called it, and then the rest of the time would be spent with them on the farms. You'd go and spend the day with them and work with them and It's kind of like a supervised farming project. I just talked to Johnny Bauer yesterday to make sure that I remembered how much they had to pay. They paid the school $40 a month for my services, and they received $100. And it was such a help to them to get started because their farming program that they were in before they went in, or if they started one when they came back, that was it's hard to believe $100 a month would mean that much. They probably could buy six or eight calves for that month at that
Was
time.
this a veterans program?
Veterans program.
Okay. So this would have been in the late 40s?
Yeah.
Okay. And
Maybe up into the late 40s.
so this was different than veterans coming here and staying here full time as students.
Yeah, we didn't have any of those in agriculture.
Okay. And you're still in touch, as is obvious, with some of those
Oh yeah,
veterans.
about a year ago, three of them and then their wives stopped it, called up and said, "Could we come and spend the evening with you?" I always had that rapport with high school students and with the veterans and so forth. It seemed to come natural.
What subjects are, did subjects or content change between, let's say, 1948 and the mid-60s?
It changed within agriculture just like it changed in any other industry that you have to keep up to date and what I call avail yourself of the education and what I call tune-ups. You have to read and talk to people and go places and keep up to date with whatever you do. If it's teaching or farming or you have a garage, cars are altogether different than they were when.
So that's updating yourself. How did the curriculum change?
Well, you change it when you've and with the adults, they would go to some workshops or something, the extension service, and then they'd have questions. Well, suppose I ought to try that, or you do try to keep up to date with what's different methods, you know. Even teaching methods, you know. I can remember when we had very little visual aids. If you had them, you had to collect butterflies or diseases and specimens and save them to show whether it was adults or kids or high school students. But then we had movies and slides, now we have better than that yet.
How did you feel about some of those changes?
Well, I always try to take advantage of them.
Okay. And your students responded positively to those?
The students respond pretty much with the attitude of the professor.
Okay.
You know, if you're going to teach it.
Were all your students males, or did you have female students too?
We, of course, when I became over in earth science, I don't ever remember having a girl in agriculture, vocational
In the
agriculture.
high school program.
But now there are many,
Right.
and they do very well.
Okay. What recollections do you have about some of the faculty who taught agriculture and related programs during the WTI years?
Well, you know, I didn't have, other than in the cafeteria at noon, really wasn't much opportunity to have much dealings with the faculty. Jim Bressler, we were either at the farm and I was always busy. I didn't have to hang around the halls or anything. I always had things to do, and it was time to go home, and I had a family with three kids and a wife and things to do at home. So the rapport was good, but I don't remember that it did much visiting.
Okay. You talked about the Brock farm. Interactions with Mrs. Brock that you recall?
Pardon?
You talked about the Brock farm And did you have any interactions with Mrs. Brock, or was that something that Jim Bresler and others handled?
Oh, he, I had no relationships with her. That was what, Jim took care of that. And I helped, I didn't have much to do on any of the managerial business at the Brock farm.
Okay.
Wasn't hired for that purpose.
Right. Now, did agricultural education continue when the Williamsport Area Community College was created in 1965?
Yes.
And you were continuing to teach then?
Then I was back with the high school program.
Back with the high school program. And that expanded, I assume, because the community college was sponsored by 20 different school districts. So how did that change what you were doing?
Well, the kids that came in, we even had a kid, we had kids from Sullivan County, from Jersey Shore, and well, about that time, when did Mr. Bresler become dean?
He became dean in 1968, beginning of 68.
I was alone in the department when after he became dean, sometime in there. And that is when I got the feeling with the, what, how I'll explain how it happened that we got involved with the Earth Science Department.
So let's talk about that. You had the vision for this Earth Science Department.
The first time I had a vision to know that I wanted to do something beyond what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure what it was going to be, but I had some dealings with adults, you know, and I always had a feeling that the best time to teach vocations is post high school. What we do in high school is sort of a trial and error. You could take some, I thought when the high school did this, makes it possible for a kid to take some electricity, some brick laying, some cinder block laying, some machine shop, and give them an opportunity to gave them an opportunity to try out to see what they wanted to be. And I thought it would be nice to be able to work with adults who had at least made their first decision that this is what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that about that time when Mr. Bresler was as dean, and I had more opportunity to express myself and kind of change things a little bit, which was normal, because our relationship was good. But you know, you have one person that's in charge, the guy and the second guy in command isn't in charge, and Dr. Carl's son-in-law is and still is. Has owns a lot of forest land, and his son now, Dr. Carl's son-in-law's son, is in lumbering or logging or manages or has this timber. And he, I think that had something to do with Dr. Carl's interest in forestry. And he had mentioned that it would be nice if we could have that, if we could. And we were interested in expanding, and then an associate degree program, you know, was is a challenge. But then where are you going to teach it? You have no, can't teach it down there in the basement or of a machine shop. And I had particularly interest in horticulture, like nursery management or growing of shrubs, and floriculture, agribusiness, and he talked about it, and I think he seemed to have some good rapport with Stabley, Herm Stabley, who was our representative to Washington, and he knew that the penitentiary had excess land because they needed a lot when they were in the ammunition business, but weren't in that anymore. They just needed what they needed for the prison, and that the land would be available through General Service Administration, and I think with Capaldi, was it Louis Capaldi?
Louis Capaldi, right.
And he was a person that in planning, and they were able to acquire. I knew about it, but I was busy on my what I was doing. I think about 165 acres plus an acre or two of where the Earth Science Division is now. And the agreement was that you could have access to it for 20 years, and if you come up with a proposal and you were able to fulfill, carry out your intentions, and they, of course, they would they thought the idea was good for educational purposes. If you are successful for 20 years, then you own the land. The land that we have there now, the government will never take away, because it's been there, all been used for the purpose intended. But had in 10 years you decide to quit, you would have lost it.
Right.
And then my part came in to, now we're gonna, what are we gonna teach? I think he'd say, I think you ought to do something in forestry. And I said, well, I would like to include a couple programs in horticulture, one in agribusiness and wood products. And then, of course, heavy equipment. never had a place to practice to do what they need to do, you know. And
sorry, yeah.
He needs to flip a new tape in.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
You're okay?
No, we're good.
We're good, okay.
What'd you say?
We're okay.
And so we thought that 165 acres would give the heavy equipment a ideal place to what I call bore around, move ground here to there and do whatever they need to do, because oftentimes the students in heavy equipment were, at that time, we're talking about 25 years ago or more, 30, it was more interested in the operation than they were the mechanical part. And Clyde Brasson, a man by the name of Stitzel, that's where their emphasis was, on making roads and doing that type of thing. And they did the maintenance that was necessary, but that wasn't their main expertise. And so then we were able to absorb them, and with the help of Capaldi, and he talked to Clyde Brass about what facilities would you need to teach that, and he talked to me about what we would need to do with the things that I was interested in, and how did I prepare to do that? Well, first thing I did was take a 2 weeks course in the summer in forestry at Penn State, just to get an idea. And then, you know, New York State, they've been in 2-year associate degree programs for years with their programs, and with horticulture and whatever. And I spent time with them, went up and visited their campus to see how they did it, and also went up to Syracuse, where they teach forestry as a 4-year programs or beyond. And went up there twice, once for a conference and once up to just to see how things were going. And I received help from Penn State also. Man in charge of that was interested in horticulture gave me some ideas. And then you look at catalogs and you talk to people, and then we talked to future advisory persons that eventually ended up on the advisory committee, you know. So I had some ideas of what I wanted to do, and the facilities that were needed. And I pretty much, with the help of those people, because we didn't have I think we taught 1 year, 1 or 2 years of forestry down here in the basement, which was an awful situation, you know. And 1 year, I think when Wade Ettinger came, he was 1 year, maybe tried to teach something, but we had no labs, no greenhouse, but we knew we were going to have something, or we wouldn't have never tried it. And so now where were we?
Well, Wayne Ettinger was teaching, the first person to teach in the nursery management program, is that right?
Wayne, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And who was teaching in the forestry program?
A man by the name of Houseman. He was the first person we hired.
And you were still teaching what?
At that time, I still had the VOAG students and doing all these things on the side.
On the side.
And I had them until we moved over there. And when we had the opening exercises, Dr. Carl said that I would be the boss. But I never knew until that day that he had that in mind. And, you know, you don't know that.
So were you involved in participating in reviewing the actual construction of the campus?
Not actual construction, but design of what this is going to be a lab for the high. See, we had to set up, so we had facilities for high school and college students. We had two classes in forestry of high school, one in VOAG and one in horticulture. Those are four programs, a high school program. We had to make facilities for them so they were equal and not one had more than the other. So we had facilities for the high school programs that we knew we had then, and we didn't know when, how long that was going to last. That came later. And then we had facilities for the college programs.
And they would be there at the same time?
The same time, but separate. And that part I figured out with the help of whoever I could get.
Right. So the building gets dedicated in 1972. And is that when you found out, at the dedication? And Dr. Carl, who was the president of the community college and had been president, the second president of the Williamsport Technical Institute, how did you feel when Kenny said?
I sort of surmised, because we always had good rapport, but he never told me. I guess I'd been disappointed because I had been. I guess maybe that's the way he did things.
So now you became the director of the campus.
Yeah.
That fundamentally changed what you were doing. How did you feel?
Oh, I feel then just like I feel now. I was busy.
Did you do any teaching or did you stop teaching?
I didn't have time to
do
anything except keep things going. Some of them called me the mother hen. But, you know, you had evaluations, you had advisory committees, you had generally interviewed students that came. They would come there, and someone had to tell them, you can't say to Wayne, here's a student, he's teaching, you know. And college faculty, I found out that when they're not teaching or don't have office hours, they generally may not be there. I was used to a teacher being there from 8 to 4.
Right.
So I had to do lots of things that, now if you'd ask them, you knew you could set an appointment, that was okay. But so the secretary would say, here's a student and family from Wellsboro or wherever. And
did the new facility increase the number of school districts sending high school students?
It increased the number of students. I don't know about districts.
Okay. And the first two programs that had, actually they were created before you went to the new facility, were forestry and nursery management, correct? And you then took responsibility for the service and operation of heavy earth equipment also. And then what about floriculture? That was added
well,
next.
The first year when we were down in the basement, we had no, that was an addition. We added that. And Mrs. Fink was one of the first teachers and still there. I don't think it works that way now, but with the deans that we had at that time, whether it was Bresser or who was the other one?
Herschel Jones.
No, he was assistant to the president.
Well, before him, Louis Bardo. Before Jim Bresser.
Waters.
Ed Waters, that's right. That
Ed Waters. They would want to be involved, but I always, and that was something you had to do. You know, I have a feeling that one of the most important things that any administrator does is who he hires. if you, you have to, that's very important, one of the most important, and most of them that's there were hired under my recommendation. All of them that was there that I was there was hired under my recommendation. Now, if when they came over to see, I'd come over with them to see Waters or whoever, but I don't ever remember them saying, I think you made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I didn't make one mistake, but they didn't detect it either.
So who are some of the faculty that played an instrumental role then in those early years in shaping those programs?
All of them.
Okay.
And I still, you know, if they retire, I know about it.
I recall seeing you recently at a retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that that faculty person was very happy to have you there. What were some of the additional opportunities that the new Earth Science Campus and facility provided for the natural resource programs at Earth Science? Because you're a person who, from your early years on your farm, you knew there was a potential for more. And as you said, being a teacher of agriculture education, you knew there was a potential for more. Well, now you have a new campus, you have new grounds. Were there some other things that you saw?
Well, as I mentioned, I guess I didn't mention it, but I always thought it would be nice to have an arboretum. And Richard Wildminster was very interested in that, and I was able to get several grants to buy shrubbery so that you didn't have to run someplace to. And I thought it would be nice, and I still think it would be nice if we had almost a person to take care of the arboretum, and then it would be part of something that people come here, they'd see the arboretum belonging to the Williamsport Area Community College or the Penn College, and new varieties, new species, new types of things. That would be one of the things that I would be interested in, and I thought we were started on that. And I don't know, I hadn't any great goals because we were always busy, it seemed.
Mm-hmm. What was the local response to what was the response of local business and industry to the programs?
I think that was one of the things that I didn't understand that was available. We got very little, we had advisory committees, and maybe the 30-year that we're talking about ago, that wasn't the thing to do as much as it is now, because I don't remember ever getting much help from industry. And I think that was maybe it was some of my fault, because I didn't know that that was feasible, you know. And we had advisory committees from all over the state, and they'd come either once or twice a year, and we'd serve, Louie and Corwin would serve, you know.
Mm-hmm. Meals, right.
Meals.
From
and
what became Lejeune, right?
There was no Lejeune, you know.
Right.
And so I think that was something that I didn't realize was possible.
But you did connect with the district forestry, didn't
you?
Oh,
yes.
Very actively?
Any district areas that I knew about. See, I'm still working at, still doing it, but I have trouble when you go to meetings to hear. And worked with conservation all these years, you know, 50. And I did my student teaching in the Poconos, and I learned some things by taking 20 kids out to plant trees, learn two or three different things that I still know about. One of them, if you want kids or even adults to work good when you're trying to accomplish some job, if you work with them, not just stand and boss, if you work with them, they'll work better. And also you have to encourage them and have some kind of an incentive for them to do it, because we were planting trees and it had two groups, and one of the groups would get trees would be disappearing. And one kid says, "Mr. Sick, there's woodchuck hole, they shove them in the hole." And so I had to watch that besides helping, you had to see what was going on.
Right.
And those couple things from all those years, I still remember.
What incentives did you use?
Well, what incentives did I use? I don't know. One of them incentive is you work with them. My son is in business, and they employ much as 15 Mexicans in landscape business in Chester County. And he told me, and I guess maybe he knew that, that when he works with the people, with his helpers, they can get a lot done. Because if he sort of sets the standard for how hard they work, you know.
One of the programs, or one of the facilities at least, at the Earth Science Campus that had to be constructed, it wasn't there initially, I believe, was the sawmill. And that's part of your experience going.
Well, not really. I understood the value of it, but there was a man by the name of Bud Zahner that had always, rather sophisticated man, but he was a good sawyer, and he was very helpful, and that's what he did, is take care of the sawmill and helped erect it and figured it out. You know, it's always been a problem in vocational education to find someone who has a practical experience and an adequate education. Mm-hmm. Still a problem. To be really vocational and doing something, you have to have had experience doing it. And then, we had trouble finding someone in the sawmill because that would knew had it, and then could meet people and
good interpersonal skills,
and,
right?
Yeah, and teach the kids. And
were there any safety concerns that administrators raised because of the sawmill?
Well, yeah. Well, I think faculty were pretty aware of that, and would people, you know, we get visitors once in a while from the state, or I guess it's some department, the state department, it would emphasize wearing of glasses and, you know, and air, whatever.
Speaking of visitors, in your years both in WTI and WAC, did you have international visitors come to your programs?
We had state. I don't offhand ever remember any international. That, okay. Because that was vocational agriculture, and you see there would be places in York State that were doing what we were doing that's been there before we thought about it.
Right. As we talk about the various properties and programs of the Earth Science Campus, for purposes of clarification, let's distinguish that these properties you mentioned earlier, acquired from the federal government, were part of the ordinance and the prison property, that there actually were two properties on either side of Route 15.
When we acquired the 165 acres, it never occurred to me that that wouldn't be plenty for the heavy equipment. But I found out that they wanted a place where they could go out and dig and move ground and practice. And it was very unsightly. And I was looking for a place where we could have the main campus there looking good. And even though I understood exactly what they wanted to do, I didn't want to be within sight of everyone and dust and all that type of thing. I knew that I inquired from Capaldi, where could we, is it possible to get more land from the prison? And they owned this land down on 15 left. And he and I went to Philadelphia together and talked to him down there about it. And we were able to get two parcels were out of sight, and where they could at night leave it where it was, and the next day if it rained it would be all right. And then they built a facility was built for them to do some mechanical work and to get in out of the weather. And so that was how that happened.
Did the forestry program use any of that land initially?
No. We used some of Dr. Parks's land, and we found places that, and we did some harvesting down at the women's penitentiary at Muncie, and some on Dr. Parks's land and other places. I just don't recall where all we went, but we had a harvesting project each spring.
And the Dr. Parks land would have been the Morgan Valley land, which by that point he had given to the community college.
Yeah. But mostly what we did there is what called timber stand improvement. We didn't do much harvesting.
Right. You raised an important point, I think, because the colleges and the WTI both were famous, and the Penn College is still famous, for getting involved in providing services that are for community groups and townships and things of that sort, school districts, but are also educational and beneficial to the students. Did service and operation do some of those during your tenure?
They did quite a bit. We worked for Montoursville, where the Montoursville Park is now, with Ben Eldred. He did change the contour of that whole area, and that was helpful. We've several, but one of the most important one is where the Barrow Pit was for Route 15 and other. I don't know where the soil went to, but it was gone, and there was a tremendous Barrow Pit on Route 15 where the Little League headquarters, not where the main building is, but where the fields are. And our heavy equipment people worked in there for several years, leveling and sorting the rocks out and cutting the brush or digging the brush out and making it so it could be, it was feasible to try to do something. And it could be that whoever gave him permission to do it had in mind that we would use that, could be used as a ballpark sometime, maybe for a Little League. I think that was the idea of someone.
That's my understanding, local. Talking to others, yes. Any other programs get involved, landscaping?
Well, we did the Historical Society, historical building on 4th Street, and when the elementary school up Lycoming Creek, many, I wouldn't be able to, especially with heavy equipment, people, this type of thing. And Wayne Ettinger, when he worked at Way's Garden on pruning and planting, and we did lots of projects for the area.
And through the years, many projects here on the main campus as well for nursery management, for example, and I guess forestry also for pruning.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other programs that we've overlooked?
Well, we had agribusiness for probably 5 or 6 years. It did. The population went down, and I said, when you lose students, you have a faculty member that specializes in that, they have to, you don't have students, you don't have a job, and that wasn't possible, didn't work. We also had a project in forestry, what was it called, wood products. Mm-hmm. And I still think that would work, because you'd be surprised at the amount of business in making a molding and that type, wood products. But we didn't have the money to pay the right kind of instructor. Our pay structure wasn't high enough to take someone from industry that was doing that to come here. We got a person who didn't understand, I think that still could be done.
Small engine repair, was that while you were the director?
Small engine?
Yes.
That was just like a sideline.
During the community college years, there were continuing education courses were any taught at the Earth Science Campus?
Mostly in the floriculture program.
Okay.
And a couple in I think it was mostly in the floriculture area. Floral design. There might have been some on landscaping, home landscaping. I think we did have a program, short 6 weeks or something in that.
Mm-hmm. You have a long and distinguished involvement with professional associations and with land conservation. Would you tell me about your involvement there?
Well, that's...
It's ongoing, even to this day. Right?
Soil conservation, it's called, but it's wise use of our natural resources. That's the definition that I like to think about, which includes soil and forests and waters and air and whatever. And I was chairman of the Lycoming County Conservation District at least 40 years, and started with the interest in that, doing student teaching up in the Poconos. That was in 48. And I'm still a member of the conservation district, it's called associate member, but I attended conferences and we've had an active conservation district many years that didn't lose its focus.
And was that idea of conservation and the environment part of what you were able to instill in Earth Science Campus and its programming in any way?
Well, you know, over on the main campus now, they have a program.
Environmental technology?
Yeah.
Right.
But that's a little beyond what conservation districts were interested in. We had students with projects, high school students with projects in conservation, and Forestry Department uses our facilities sometimes for their meetings, but the conservation of our natural resources, it kind of fits in with most any program if you understand it.
So you instilled that at least in your own teaching?
I did when I taught high school students, mm-hmm. but beyond that, I don't think I was able to do much along those lines.
Okay. Even this summer, you attended Ag Days up at Penn State, is that right? So you're still involved in agricultural activities of some sort? Besides your own raising of plants and so forth?
Do whatever I can in conservation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Workshops that they have up there or conventions or locally. DEP has meetings, talk about.
And you're involved in on the planning body for Lycoming County, is that right?
Well, no, it's our township.
Your township, okay.
My wife and I both worked on international students for several years.
Okay.
We brought people from overseas here, and some of them came to WAC or Penn College or wherever. But that, it got to the point that it's too expensive for us to earn that much money to bring someone over.
And mm-hmm.
there's still, as you know, many students come, but most of them that come now are not poor students. Their families have enough to pay their way.
Okay. As you mentioned that aspect of international education, are there other aspects, as you look back on your career, that we haven't talked about you think we ought to discuss today? Something we've left out?
Well, I don't know, Brother. My wife and I have done considerable traveling, but that hadn't broadens our viewpoints, you know, but I don't know that we're able to pass it on. One interesting thing we did, we took a bus trip of Europe one time, 10 countries, 10 capitals in 20 days. That that's quite an interesting trip.
Well, I think that does go back to what you said at the very beginning, in which when you had that opportunity to go to Penn State and that National Youth Program, that broadened your world. And so what I'm hearing, you know, at this point is that broadening one's world is a very important part of being a person, being an educator, being involved here at WTI, WAC, and Penn College. So
Monday, my wife and I are going to go up to Lake George, a 3-day bus trip up as far as Vermont. I don't know what we'll see, but I didn't tell her, but I've been there before.
Oh, I'm sure you'll see something new.
Yes, I'm sure. It wasn't yesterday, you know.
Right. As you look back at your role in agricultural education and the creation of the Earth Science Campus and its programs, regarding what do you take the greatest satisfaction?
I guess in knowing people and having rapport with high school students and college students and faculty, and having them seem to be friendly and interested in, and I think that seems to me I get the most satisfaction. Occasionally someone will say, well, you told me this or that, but that isn't so important. It's just, I guess as you approach 100, your friendships are very important.
Mm-hmm. So those personal connections that you've talked about, hearing from students from many, many years ago, that's got to be something greatly valued. And
maybe, I don't know whether you had this experience or not, but when my kids were little, smaller, and we'd go to the mall, they got so they didn't want to go because you'd see someone and they'd want to talk, or I'd want to talk, probably both ways, and they didn't know them, you know, and they'd say, we no use you going down there with you because all you do is talk to these people that we don't know.
But those people remembered you and obviously valued those
memories. You remember them. I guess that's the important part, that you remember them.
Mutual. Good. Well, thank you for sharing some of your experiences and memories and helping us document your very important role in both in agricultural education and in the creation of the Earth Science Campus and its programs that are there today and thriving. Thank you so much, Joe.
Very welcome. And I guess I can say that I appreciate the interest that people would have in what one has accomplished.